The Americas. Conservation in Latin America. A sideline in bodies. Wildlife trafficking offers criminal groups high profits with little risk.
Hyacinth macaws, blue and vast, a metre long from tail to beak. The jaguar, stocky and muscular, whose ancestors crossed the Bering Strait a million years ago. Sloths, the slow, weird-looking tree dwellers. Latin America is home to a dazzling array of creatures. Some 40% of the world's species are found between Mexico's deserts, the Amazon rainforest, and the mountains of Patagonia. But as the United Nations Biodiversity Conference assembles in Cali, Colombia, in late October, the trafficking of the region's biological riches has become a big business for Latin America's sprawling organized crime groups. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the DHS, ranks wildlife trafficking, including fisheries and timber, as the fourth largest source of criminal earnings after drugs, counterfeiting, and human trafficking. This booming trade is burning through Latin America's biological resources. One study found the average size of wildlife populations had shrunk by 95% since 1970 in Latin America and the Caribbean, more than in any other region of the world. Demand for creatures takes many forms. They can be sold as pets, status symbols, delicacies, and the components of traditional remedies. At ports, customs officials find birds in bottles and jaguar fangs in jacket linings. There is a lively local market too. Mexican mafia bosses keep big cats. In Peru, giant frogs from Lake Titicaca are blitzed into frog juice, an allegedly aphrodisiac smoothie. China is the biggest market for many species. The Wildlife Conservation Society, an NGO in New York, estimates that wildlife trade between South America and Asia has doubled over the past decade. The Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, or CITES, has proved no match for gangsters with machine guns. Signed by almost every country, it requires a license to trade some 40,000 species across borders. But it is up to member countries to enforce CITES rules. Many do not. Criminal groups tend to handle the work of moving creatures across borders. People from local communities do the poaching. The traffickers make the real money, with markups of 20-fold or more. Sentences are light, but such crimes are rarely prosecuted at all. This makes wildlife trafficking a tempting additional business for groups that already run supply chains from jungles to ports. The growing involvement of criminal groups has pushed law enforcement agencies to take wildlife trafficking more seriously. Some countries have set up specialized enforcement units aiming to nab gunrunners and drug smugglers who get sloppy with their wildlife trafficking sideline. Keith McKinney, who heads one such unit at the DHS, calls wildlife trafficking the soft underbelly of organised crime. Earth League International, an NGO, hopes the organised crime connections lead to harsher and more consistent penalties for the wildlife traffickers it tracks. It has infiltrated gangs moving jaguar fangs in Bolivia and totoba fish in Mexico. In both cases, Chinese traffickers were arrested. The group has identified hundreds of persons of interest across Latin America, the vast majority of whom are also involved in crimes such as money laundering and human trafficking, which keeps officials in the United States keenly interested. Colombia has taken the strongest stand of any Latin American country against wildlife trafficking. Culprits face prison sentences of up to 12 years and fines of up to $12 million. The country has a specialized police unit, the Carabineros, partly devoted to combating wildlife crime. But the idea that such supply-side interventions could halt the trade is a pipe dream. Police forces in Latin America often lack the resources needed to curb the most disruptive gang activities, let alone the niche of wildlife trafficking. Police officers may not know which species are illegal to trade. Corruption is widespread, and convictions for trafficking are even rarer than prosecutions. Some governments are either disengaged or complicit. That means traffickers will always find a way to meet the strong and growing demand for wildlife. Curbing demand is not much easier. In Brazil, NGOs run educational campaigns in an attempt to change cultural habits of consuming wild animals as a culinary delicacy or keeping them in cages. A Chinese commuter might be met with clips of Jackie Chan warning them off shark fin and big cat bones. But such campaigns probably work better for iconic species than for orchids or seahorses. And there always will be a hard core of consumers who are unmoved. A more radical idea is the creation of a regulated supply of wildlife. Licensing the limited and managed capture of wild creatures or captive breeding programs could reduce the pressure on wild populations. Various breeding farms already sell exotic birds across the region, but illegally caught wildlife often ends up being laundered through the legal supply. And it also muddles the message to consumers when a black and white ban might work better. Ideally, investigators could evaluate interventions to figure out what works. But the most critically endangered species, like the vaquita porpoise, of which there are only 10 known individuals remaining, have little time left. Conservationists and law enforcement need to hit both supply and demand hard and fast.